Last week we started a new study. Was life and culture so different? We started off by looking at clothing, how they dressed. There's some distinction between men and women. And of course, when it comes to ornamentation, that becomes very clear. We wore a lot of makeup and jewelry even back ancient times. Then we started talking about housing. These are pictures of modern Bedouin tents, and we can see how luxurious those tents could be, and there's no reason to think that Abraham, who was a very wealthy man, would have had ramshackle tent. He probably had some pretty nice housing for what it was. Remember exactly where we left off. We were talking about how the tents were set up in such a way that they were not neighbors. They weren't close to one another. They were separated, so they had some privacy. They had put the flocks sometimes in the middle and all these tents kind of out around them. When you think about Abraham, he was able to raise up an army from his own servants. You got to get that kind of a picture in mind, that it wasn't just one or two tents out in the wilderness, a whole community, a large community of tents, and all of his servants. And so it kind of changes our picture of some of things that we don't maybe give a lot of thought to. Tents were divided into parts. Men were not allowed, visitors were not allowed to go into the main body of the tent. There was one section of it that they were allowed to enter, separated by curtains. Did we talk about this last week? Okay, let's start here then. Let's go Genesis 8. So rather than those triangular tents like I showed you, the modern ones, these were more cubicle-type tents. And the front tent, would oftentimes they'd have the sides off or raised up, and so it was just kind of an awning where you'd sit in the heat of the day. And then there's the living tent where the wife and her children would reside in. And then an even further back part of the tent would probably have storage and things. And so with only a tent wall between the area where you're entertaining and where the wife is sitting, you're able to hear what's going on. We see that in stories. Let's read Genesis 8, picture that Abraham and the Lord are speaking there in the front part of the tent, kind of separated from them. That would have been culturally the thing, that women would not have entered, and so they would have stayed out of sight. Yet she was very interested in what was taking place and what was being said, and so she, and they're able to even this wall of the tent, a door in the wall, which would be able to pass from one section to another. So a large family may have several tents in order to house them. Genesis 31, verse 30. Okay, so we get this picture that we may just read right over, but each of Jacob's household had their own tent. And so Jacob probably had his own, each of his wives, and they would have had their children in their tents. And so they were all kind of separated from one another. Because the tent is moved often, its contents are minimalistic. You didn't accumulate a lot of things. You know, as we live in one place for many, many years, you realize that when you have to move, you move somebody else, and they have a moving sale, or they pull up a dumpster. I saw a dumpster dropped off up the street here. Somebody's moved out, and now they've got to clean out all of their excessive stuff, and they've got a whole dumpster full of stuff. Well, when you're moving regularly, you don't want to accumulate stuff, and you would only keep those things which were either very valuable to or are necessary for, and so they wouldn't have had a lot of things. They would have had some basic utensils. They would have had mats for sleeping on, water skins for hauling water and wine, sacks of grain, basic tools. Probably would have had a grinding stone to grind up their mill, maybe a loom of some kind, but even that was very basic, made out of some sticks that you'd stick in the ground and some loom weights that you tied at the end of each of your piece of string. And so most of that could be made anywhere. You know, you take some clay and bake it, and your weights, you find a few sticks. So they wouldn't have to keep a lot of that stuff. They could just remake it when they got to the next place. So they keep some very basic things. Hebrews 11, verse 9. Okay, though they were heirs of the promise, their life was a life of sin in the land. And just thinking of the pictures of the illegal aliens coming across the border, you don't see them coming with of stuff, but maybe a couple of backpacks. So it's very modest living. New tents were usually very rare. If somebody got married or the families expanded and you need to add a tent, but for the most part, it was a structure that was maintained and then passed on to the next generation. And each year, if there was a section of the roof of the tent that was getting threadbare, the women of the family would weave out a new piece of cloth, and they would replace that piece, move the old piece down in the tent wall, which didn't have to shed the moisture. So they made very good materials, and it was just constantly rejuvenation. And you'd have to kind of think that the tabernacle probably wouldn't be taken care of in a similar way, done regular maintenance on it, so that it wasn't as long as they just get run down. Maybe I should have started with this one, caves. It actually comes in as they come into the land to reside more permanently. Caves make a very natural shelter, and they were very abundant, the land of Palestine. And scientists and archaeologists and stuff today are coming to understand that their concepts of cavemen were all wrong. You know, the image of a caveman is something that is just above an ape and dragging his knuckles on the ground and rude drawings on the wall. But they've come to understand that there's not nearly as many cave dwellings as you would expect, and it would be very natural if you're traveling and living a nomadic life that if you come across a cave, it would be a natural place to take shelter. It gets you out of the weather, and especially in a hot climate, what's special about a cave? It's cool. The story about David and Saul, and Saul was tending to his in the cave, taking advantage of the cool of the cave as well. And so it would have been very natural for them to make use of those caves. And then as they resided in the land longer and became more wealthy, they would sometimes build their houses right over top of a cave. And so they would bring the animals in and house them live in the house. And they might use it for storage. Up through the 1950s, we had people that would have caves for their canning goods and stuff. We don't see people putting in too much. It was a very common thing to store goods in a cave. And so it was an important part of life. Let's look at, verse. In Obadiah, they refer to the Edomites as being those that dwell in caves. There's a picture there of Petra. And that's not a typical cave, is it? they've beautified their surroundings. And that's something that man would naturally do. We reside in places we like to beautify our surroundings. 1 Samuel 14:11. Okay, they're coming out of the holes where they've... And so caves were a natural place of safety and of hiding. And so people would know where those caves are, would reside in them when marauders were coming through the countryside. And so that is the reference there. Job 30 and verse 6, okay, dwelling in the rocks. Genesis 19 and verse 30. So Lot and his two daughters lived. Know the story of David and how being from Saul live in caves. So ladies, how long would you like to live in a cave? I've seen some pretty nice caves. They're pretty dry. No? Yeah. Okay. The first task is close off the cave so the bats can't. Okay. Yeah. And when storms come, I'm sure caves would have been very comfortable in comparison to it. But we can understand why move out of a cave and into a house fairly. But realizing that even the houses that they built weren't much more than a cave. The top picture is of Egyptian houses, and so they're not exactly what the Hebrews built, but that gives you kind of an idea. Some very common similarities in the bottom picture is of a wealthy house, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But they're building out of mud brick, or taking the mud and baking it in the sun. It's not much more than just a dirt house. But for safety's sake, they had very few openings, so you wouldn't have had a lot of windows to look out of. And you would have thick walls, and it would act kind of like a cave. The sun would bake the outside of the wall, but because the walls were so thick, the heat wouldn't penetrate until late in the day. And so it would remain cooler in than cool off at night. So we're moving out of the cave into a house. Well, the house, the floor is packed earth. The walls are brick. Let's look at Job chapter 24 and verse 6, into houses. Ezekiel 12 and verse 5. Okay, you're feeling very secure in your house. You have mud walls, and somebody can just through the wall and get into your house. You know, our houses are not impenetrable though, right? You can break a window and get in pretty easy. But here, in about any part of the structure, if you had a small implement, you threw the wall in or read and take something out. Luke chapter 15. I wish I had a pointer like Bill. So this is a wealthy person's house. If we go back to a more impoverished person living out in the countryside, not living in a town, they would have started with just the basic house, the second story off. So you'd come in the front door, you wouldn't have a wall here, you wouldn't have the courtyard, you wouldn't have the upstairs. You just have come into the front room, and in that front room you just have packed earth for the ground, and you'd bring your animals into that part of the house. Because to leave your animals outside was to leave them exposed to lions, and so you'd bring your animals right into the house with you. Then at the back of the house, you might have a step up of some kind where you would climb up and have a little level area where the family would reside, kind of giving them separation from their animals. And again, dirt floors. And so can you imagine now the lady losing her coin? Why is it so hard for her to find the coin? Why is she sweeping the whole house? Well, she's living in dirt. You ever drop something in dry dirt? Dry dirt kind of powderizes, and it just almost swallows what you drop on it. And so they wouldn't want their floor to get that way. They'd probably wet it down, keep the dust down, and keep it packed. But you've also got animals living in it, and you probably have hay and for your animals. And so your conditions are not, you know, Iowa farmhouse conditions. Well, maybe not too far from it, about keeping cows. But you understand now how she could lose that coin and how she has to sweep very carefully, cleaning every aspect of that house to try to find that coin, because it's very easy to get lost in that kind of an environment. So the roofs were reeds overlaid with clay and sand and sometimes pebbles that were packed in and almost made like a pavement. And the law required that they would build a parapet around the outside of their roof because the roof was in use. You'd have a set of stairs that would go up the outside of the house, maybe over here. It wouldn't be a stairway from the inside of the house. Well, as a poor person, you're sleeping inside. Somebody else could get up on top of your roof. And so that was something that they tried to take care of as they got more well off or had longer period of time living in that same house. They'd try to remedy those. And so what they would do, the first thing, they'd build a courtyard. They'd build a surrounding wall around them with a door in it so that they'd be able to come in up on top of their house. But if you were living in the city, that was entirely different. Country living we're talking about. As you got more wealthy, instead of building up, probably the first thing you would do would be to build another room on the other side of your courthouse, your courtyard. So you have a two-room house here, a two-room house here with a little courtyard in between, and you do most of your work out in the courtyard. Houses were mainly storing things. They didn't really live inside their houses like we might think. These roofs had a wall around them because they would store things up there. They would use it to dry grains, would use it to cool off because you'd get a breeze. And sometimes they'd even put a tent or a small room up there. Let's look at Psalm 129:6. Go ahead and catch verses 5 through 7. I put this in here twice. I'm sorry. Okay, in 2 Kings, disasters were described as grass on the housetops when God wanted to bring judgment. So you're living in an arid area, and you have a wet season. When the wet season comes, that are embedded in the mud that you built your house out of sprout, and they start to grow. Or the seed that, you know, you've carried grain up there to work with or store it up there, the mice have gotten into it, scattered it, you accidentally spilt something or whatever, and it was very natural that in the spring those seeds would sprout up. And the houses would all look green. But then once the rain stopped, there was no root. And that grass would dry up very quickly and turn brown. And it wouldn't produce well. You know, it wouldn't be something that you would harvest. And so it was made into it. You have a mud roof, you're going to have a likelihood of Proverbs 19. You got a leaky roof. It's drip, drip, drip. Time to fix the roof again. These things had to be made. Got worn. If it got too wet, if it had a puddle, you know, you got a flat roof, you get some puddling, and then that erodes away and whatnot. And so you'd end up with leak. Glad you're not living back in Bible time. The more we look at these things, and you get an understanding of what poverty is, that we're not in poverty. And we don't live in that same kind of climate. Yep, you put up with it, and the rest of the year it's dry, and you're thankful to have some holes in the house to get. Yeah. They didn't have a lot of windows, but the ones they did have had lattice or bars over it. People from coming through it, animals from coming through it. Kind of gives you a vision when you look at Exodus chapter 3 and 4. Look up all of the different plagues, but just think of how miserable life would be, each of those plagues, when you don't have screens for your window. The plague of lice, a plague of flies, a plague of locusts, a plague of frogs. If the plague was happening, you were living close to it. It was coming through your window and living with you. And so they were miserable. And let's see, what was Proverbs 7, verse 6? Okay, looking through the lattice, our study in the book of Kings, the guy that fell through the lattice. Wealthier homes had a courtyard. The first concern, we already talked about that. Now, if you weren't living out in the country on your own, you're living in a town, you're most likely going in a walled city or a walled town. Now, I put up here a picture of a Roman fort just to kind of show us that some of this goes clear on through. This would be a Roman fort in medieval times when they were taking over Europe, but they would build a wall, and it would have gates, and inside you'd have kind of the headquarters, and you might have a church and some government buildings. You'd have barracks for the soldiers to leave, maybe some places for your horses. Walled cities were places to... We get this picture from media, movies, and as if you come in to a walled city and it was like going into the market and going into housing and going into a castle, and like all of life can just kind of take place inside the city walls. That's not the way it was. You had houses that were built as a part of the city wall. And you could kind of see how that could be here. You have a double wall demonstrated, so there would have been enough room for a house to be built into that. And your windows and entry would very likely be to the inside. If there's anything pointing out, it would be on a higher level and just for defense, that somebody would be able to come in and shoot their arrows through the holes in your wall. So even up through this time, there would be a main road that would come out and go to the next fort or the next town. And along that road, you would have a whole community develop. It would be where you would set up your business, your smithing, your marketplace, a lot of places to live. People would be living outside of the city walls. But all of your daily business is done outside of the walls, and at night you would come inside the city walls for security. So it kind of changes our understanding of that as we think of like the city of Jericho. Let's look at Joshua 2 verses 4 through 6 and Jeremiah 13 on the wall. She had a roof accessible for her house. We see the custom of Jeremiah 13. So when the army is coming through and the city is shut up, we can get a better picture of the economy. What's happened? Everybody is held up inside of the city. They can't even go about their normal business. That would normally be taken care of outside of the city. You're all packed in. You're crammed in. More than probably what the Roman fort would have been. The houses would have been sharing a wall, one house to the next house, and the only distance between it would be at the front of the house, enough space for a few people to walk side by side, and then there'd be the house across the street. And all those houses would be sharing walls. And it's just packing in an immense amount of people, mainly for a place to sleep. So we get a picture of Matthew 24 and verse 17. Okay, he's talking about the tribulation time. They were to flee, and they were not to come down off the rooftop, but they were to escape out of the city. And we see this anytime you have some kind of a natural disaster. The very first thing that happens, everybody tries to take the roads they're accustomed to. You got to get to the interstate and get out of here. And within minutes, it's bumper to bumper, stop-go traffic trying to get out of the city. I listened to a story about, was it Paradise out in California where the fire went through and burnt the town? Couldn't get out because everybody was trying to get out. It just clogged up everything. And so we get this picture, it's time to flee the city. The first thing that's going to happen is the street in front of your house is going to be full of people and their wagons or wheelbarrows or whatever they're taking with them. He says, don't try to go that way. Use the road of the rooftops, because the houses are side by side by side by side. Don't go down into the house to get your stuff. Don't go trying to get out the normal way. Just take that road of the rooftops and get out of the city. Hop the next roof, run, hop the next roof, run, hop the next. And so we don't think that way. We have such large properties and our houses don't set so close together. But we can see some of that in some of our cities where they have houses and apartment buildings share walls and such. But if you had a house out in the wilderness, a solitary house, during the daytime, your door would be left open because this was a culture of hospitality. If the door is open, you're welcome to come in. If you were living in the city, your door would be closed. Or if you were living in a compound where you had your courtyard and everything and you're wealthy, your door would probably be closed, but you would have a porter that would watch the door and allow people to come in. And we see this in Acts chapter 12, verses 8. So Rhoda was the servant that was accustomed to watching the courtyard gate. They would recognize the voice of the person and would let them in, or they would say who they were and they would take a message to the master of the house and then they would let him in or whatever. But she just got excited and forgot to let him in. Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. Different churches that he's... the first one, he says, I'm leaving the door open. Nobody can shut it. And we in our culture think of an open door as... Okay. God opens a door. What are we saying? It's an opportunity. And so in our thinking, we read that, we say God's leaving an open door. He's giving them full opportunity. But what it was really saying was a full welcome. The door is open and it won't be shut. You are welcome to come. Now you get to the next verse, he's talking to a different church, and they thought they had it all figured out. They thought they were rich. And you see Jesus is on the outside of the door. The door is closed. So what's it telling us? In that culture, you're not welcome. You're not welcome here. And Jesus is knocking at the door. There's no fellowship, as they were so full of their own selves that they needed Christ. Luke chapter 11, verse 7. As we think about those pictures of the previous page here, you got the door, the section of the house where the animals are in. You go up a step, and your family is up here. And you'd have a mat there, and Mom on one side, the kids in the middle, and Dad on the other side, and here comes somebody knocking at the door. It's nighttime. I've got to get out of my comfortable bed, go down through the barnyard, and answer the door. I'm not real anxious to, because I've got to go back through the barnyard and back into bed. Well, now I've been through the barnyard, I got dirty, got to clean my feet, get into the bed. And so he's not anxious to get up to his neighbor. Doors that had locks had the lock located on the inside, and one had to put his hand through a hole in the door, and in the keys were large, cumbersome objects because they had to be strong enough to lift heavy bars that bolted the door. And so I haven't got a mental picture quite of this. I haven't seen an illustration, but apparently there was a hole that was big enough to get your arm in. You took your key and reached around and stuck it in the lock from the inside and turned it and opened the door. That's kind of complicated, but locks are kind of a complicated... we have such technology and use of metals and things that we have kind of forgotten that way of life, but you see old pictures of like illustrations of Peter, and he has these giant keys at his belt to represent the key of the kingdom. Well, it's because keys of that day were large, cumbersome things. They had to be strong enough to lift the large tumblers of their rudimentary lock system, which lifted the bar that was holding the door in place. See this in Song of Solomon, chapter 5 and verse 4. Okay, put his hand to the latch. I think... maybe there's another spot where it talks about him putting his arm through, okay, by the hole of the door. So he didn't have access to her room, to her house. He wants to see her. She's closed the door, locked the door, and he stuck his hand in. He doesn't have a key. He's begging her, please let me in. He wants to be intimate with her. He wants to have fellowship with her. Upset with him and has him locked out and through the door, keeps him out. I think we'll stop there tonight.